The Tánaiste is in Lebanon visiting the defence forces there who are serving with UNIFIL, and we're joined on the line now by Christina Finn, political correspondent with the Journal, who is in Beirut with the Tánaiste, Micheál Martin. Christina, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Do we know yet what came out of this evening's meeting with Lebanese officials about the death of Private Sean Rooney? What reassurance was offered to the Tánaiste?
Yeah, the Tánaiste met with the Lebanese ministers this evening in Beirut, and he reiterated, I think, the determination that the Irish government have to find all the facts around the killing of Private Sean Rooney. It's understood that he was quite forceful in terms of ensuring that all the information gets revealed, and, you know, he was basically sort of saying that... you know, we understand that he, noise there in the line there, unfortunately. Oh. But he's understood to have reiterated, I suppose, that really the Irish government wants to find out exactly what happened here back in December with Private Sean Rooney. He was there in Camp Shamrock in the Lebanon visiting Irish troops. And it's, you know, it was quite an emotional day, I think. It was very clear that... this event had been very, really hit home, I think, to the Irish troops over there. There was a wreath-laying ceremony that Micheál Martin attended at Tavine, which is an area where they already have a monument for other fallen Defence Force members that have lost their lives while on duty there. So, you know, it was an emotional day all round, and I think just for the Tánaiste to have met a lot of the Irish troops that are based over there, I think it really, I think, hit home in terms of, I suppose, the sacrifice that they're making there in terms of being away from their families and just having lost someone, I think, so close. A lot of people, I think, you know, didn't really want to get too much into discussing how much it meant to him, but one of the fathers, the priest over there that works with the Defence Forces, was saying that, you know, there's a lot of people, peacekeepers over there, they're very young, they're 19 years old, they've been based over in the Lebanon for just a few months, and with Private Sean Rooney having been killed last year, it really, I think, highlighted some of the vulnerability that they feel perhaps over there.
The Tánaiste was also speaking about the Women in the Defence Forces report that's mm-hmm. due in the coming days. What did he have to say on that? Because this is a matter that was raised in the Dáil this week.
Yeah, so the Women of Honour Independent Review Group report is due, I believe, within the next week to 10 days. The Tánaiste was asked specifically about what sort of outcomes he was expecting from that. He said he hadn't received the report yet, but that he was making promises that he wanted to fulfil any of the recommendations that were in the report. So I pressed him on that to see if he would be willing to accept all the recommendations that come out of that. It's understood to be quite a damaging, I think, report and a real insight into some of the treatment of women Defence Force officers that have served both past and present within the Defence Forces. And he was saying, look, he hadn't seen the report yet, but that the thrust of it was that they wanted to ensure that women and men, I think, enjoy their time with the Defence Forces but feel safe, and that I suppose progression is made and that changes can be made within the culture.
Finally, before we let you go, there's been unrest over the cost of living in Lebanon alongside mm-hmm. its many other civil difficulties. Is there any evidence of that from where you are in Beirut?
Yeah, so there's a lot of civil unrest here at the moment. We were giving very high-level security briefings about movements and all the rest with the Tánaiste, a lot of very high-level security for the visit with the Tánaiste over here at the moment, even just travelling back and forth within Camp Shamrock and back over to Beirut, which is about a 2.5-3 hour journey. There is multiple protests along some of the main motorways, so we would have come across gangs and crowds of people burning tyres on some of the main motorways or something similar, I say, to the M50 coming to large traffic jams, having to drive through, I suppose, large flames of fires that have been set there. A lot of that has to do with the currency over here at the moment has somewhat collapsed in the last couple of days. The petrol stations have closed and people cannot get fuel for their cars. But also there's quite an influential court judgment that's happening here at the moment. A lot of discussion about that explosion that happened here at the port in Beirut in 2020, right, and who is responsible for that. So an interesting time, I think, for the Taoiseach to come over here. Obviously a very emotional and moving a day, but I think lots that he'll be taking away from it.
All right, Christina Finn, political correspondent with The Journal. Thanks for joining us there from Beirut. Situation is clearly volatile, Colberry, in Lebanon at the moment, but that's nothing new in Lebanon. It's had upheaval for quite a bit of its history. Is it time, though, to review Ireland's commitment to the deployment in Lebanon? And I ask this because the mandate under which UNIFIL serves, this is Security Council Resolution 1701, is to ensure that all armed groups south of the Litani River, where UNIFIL operates, are stopped from operating, and the Lebanese, or to help stop them operating, and the Lebanese armed forces should be the sole armed group in that area of operation. It's clear that that's not possible and won't be possible.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the tasks. So basically, look, I think it's always healthy to review things regularly. I believe personally myself that the UNIFIL mission should stay. It is about 10,000 international troops there from about 47 different countries. So the mission should stay, because if it doesn't, it was pulled out about 20 years ago and had to go back in a couple of years later because a major conflict erupted. So it's there for a reason. It's keeping a lid on a conflict. A separate question is, should the Irish contingent remain there? My own personal view is it's going to be very hard, and it is very, very hard to man that mission at the moment from Ireland's point of view. We have 350 troops over there. It's just not sustainable. I'd be in favour of winding it down slightly, bring it down to about 250. That is sustainable. 350 is just too much, and the few troops we have left in this country, they're absolutely exhausted to do multiple trips back to back, and it's massive burnout.
All right, but the UNIFIL's mission itself, you wouldn't have concerns about the viability of that mission given the circumstances in Lebanon at the moment?
All peacekeeping missions operate in the grey, is what they say. You never get everything that you want. Even the Garda Síochána in our own country, one of their mandates would be to prevent any illegal weapons in this jurisdiction. Obviously there are legal weapons. We wouldn't disband the Garda Síochána because they can't achieve 100% of what they're doing. But I mean,
it's a bit of a different situation, though, isn't it? Because the Garda Síochána have more or less the monopoly of force and the upper hand in that particular struggle. UNIFIL and a very stretched Lebanese armed forces, even in the words of Mick Beery, the former Irish general who was head of UNIFIL, he says both forces are stretched. So it's a different situation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, that's only one of their functions. And their main role is basically to stabilise the area as best they can. Right. If they weren't there, there'd be mayhem.
Malcolm Byrne?
No, I'd agree with Cathal. I think it was interesting, Christina, you know, spoke about the unrest and the disturbances there. I think Lebanon has, you know, relies for about 30 to 40% of its grain coming from the Ukraine region. And obviously what's been happening in Ukraine has impacted in terms of food security for that region, along with all of the political unrest. And she obviously referenced the bomb in the harbour there in 2020. So it is a far more volatile situation than normal. I think we should always be very proud of the fact that, you know, Irish troops have taken part in all our peacekeeping missions. We're the only country to have taken part in every single UN peacekeeping mission. There is definitely a problem, and I know, as Cathal is correct, around burnout that is there. I know that this trip is particularly emotional, as Christina said. I know it's something that the Taoiseach is very aware of.
But the circumstances on the ground have changed. You know, the Hezbollah that's operating there is not the Hezbollah that was there earlier on in Ireland's time there. You have people who have come back from the civil war in Syria who are battle-hardened. There's an increased tensions between Iran and the West, and Hezbollah are Iran's proxy. So they're dealing with a sizably more dangerous situation in South Lebanon maybe than at other times they've been there, even though there was always a threat.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, the, you know, the geopolitical situation and political situations in countries are always going to change. Some of it will be influenced by internal factors and internal politics within Lebanon. Some of it will be around issues like food security or regional imbalances and what, you know, the disturbances that are happening in Iran. All of those issues are going to come into play. It is still very important, and I think this speaks to Ireland's foreign and defence and security policy. We have always believed in multilateral organisations, we've always believed in the rule of law, and we've believed in the importance of us taking part within peacekeeping missions. So yes, we need to debate it, and certainly I think for the troops who are there, they have to be our top consideration, but we should still continue to participate and support in some way peacekeeping in that region.
Gary Gannon?
Yeah, the troops, wouldn't know from some of the barracks around my area, and around my area. I mean, they're incredibly proud of the work that they've undertaken in Lebanon and elsewhere. Irish troops have put themselves in harm's way in the name of peace. That said, the situation in Lebanon is particularly volatile, and we need to be able to ensure that when people are sent there, they're supported, they can be as safe as you can be in an environment such as that. But if we can't prevent burnout from the soldiers that we send there, then we have to have very serious questions of ourselves. So yes, the troops themselves are proud of the work they do, but as representatives of the state, we need to have a very strong debate amongst ourselves as to the purpose they're there, what we can provide for them, and are we asking too much of them in those circumstances?
Yeah, my own colleague, Seán O'Riordan, who's a defence correspondent in The Examiner, and he had a piece earlier on this week about talking about recruitment and retention. It also adds to the burnout. And he pointed out that, you know, there is no real major incentive at the moment to attract young people to sign up to the defence forces, that the private sector obviously pay better wages. It's, you know, the mould, it's not a 9-to-5 job. The working time directive doesn't apply to the defence forces, and representatives for RACO have obviously been raising the issue about pensions for so long. And there was figures that he had in the piece which were quite extraordinary. In 2021, there was close to 600 personnel in the defence forces that left before retirement age, and they only recruited 300. Now Minister for Enterprise, former Minister for Defence Forces, Simon Coveney, got a massive package in the budget. So it looks like, you know, in order to prevent burnout and to attract our people into the defence forces, something seriously needs to be considered here by the government to ensure that young people are attracted to it and personnel continues.
Colm Berry, we've had a situation though where we've had full employment in the country before, where wages in the private sector were high before, but there's something different this time in terms of the flight from the defence forces out of it. Is it the structure? Is it the reorganisation of the defence forces that's happened that has now less promotional opportunities? Or what is it that has changed?
Well, there's a lot of factors at play. I think the biggest competitor are actually other parts of the public service rather than the private sector. So people are leaving for the guards, for the fire service, for the prison service, which pay a normal rate. Just going back to what Ciara was saying, and she's 100% right, but there is actually a two plans already completed. So we have a commission on the Defence Forces, published report. We actually have the government's own high-level action plan. So we've done all the consideration we need. We know what the problems are. We know what the solutions are. We just need to implement.
Right, two plans tied up, Malcolm Byrne, much like the Eli Roisin and the Eli Neave, which can't set sail because of recruitment and retention issues.
And so we had the Commission on the Future of the Defence Forces. The government is fully committed to implement that. As colleagues here would know, the largest increase in any vote for any government department was the vote for the Department of Defence. I think there's a very clear strategy that is set out there. Some of that is obviously in terms of updating equipment and so on that is necessary, but we do need to address the question around starting salaries and terms and conditions. And that is being addressed in terms of what is being proposed. So as a result of what's going to happen, we're going to be talking about the pay rates, including the military service allowance for the ranks of a private three-star or able seaman in the first 3 years of service will start at €36,418 in year one. That compares to, for instance, a starting salary when this is introduced for a Garda of 32,921 or teacher post-primary of 37,879. So it should be at the same comparable level for other public servants. That's what's going to happen as a result of the implementation.
What are we going to do until that point in order to retain the naval personnel, soldiers who are all, they're scarping for the very means of just paying their rent? This all comes back to the cost of living, the cost of rent, housing. We took a very eye-opening and I would say depressing trip down to Hall Boland last year to meet some of the naval recruits down there. You're talking about young men and women who are incredibly proud to serve, but they also can't afford to pay the rent. They're living in poverty. So we're talking about getting their ships out to sea. Well, they're actually talking about putting food on the table. It's just how extreme this is. The Future Defence Commission didn't take pay into consideration as part of it. But then every year, we also have this ridiculous situation where politicians are calling for our army to be sent to airports or go and combat rhododendrons or any ridiculous thing that comes up like that. If we want to value our armed forces who go overseas and put themselves in harm's way in the name of peace, stop undermining them every time we have a problem in this country when it comes to sending them to the airports. Pay them appropriately, give them the appropriate level of equipment, let them do the work that they do in a proud way and treat them that way. No other country would do that.
Just two very quick points, actually, and just for your listeners at home. The reason why the Defence Force pay structure is so special or so different is that they don't have access to the Workplace Relations Commission, they don't have access to the Labour Court, and they can't go on strike. So they require government intervention to ensure a level playing field.
You think that's been exploited, do you?
Utterly. But there's another reason why these two reports haven't been implemented, and I've been saying this for a while now, but we need a standalone, dedicated defence minister. Our last two defence ministers are competent people. Our current one is competent people. But you can't expect Micheál Martin to be Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs, Minister for Defence, and party leader. You just can't do it. If he's spending 2 days a month dealing with defence issues. Mm-hmm. If you're running a business and you're spending 2 days a month running that business is going to go bankrupt. And that's the reason the Defence Force...
All right, Malcolm Byrne, we could be as proud as we like of the Defence Forces in this country, but if it doesn't translate into, for example, what Cathal Berry said, a full ministerial portfolio or not sending them out to cut down the rhododendrons, then in reality, it's just words, isn't it?
No, well, and we can't just, utter patronising words. I mean, this is why the issues around pay are being addressed. This is why we're talking about very significant investment, because we haven't even touched on, issues around cybersecurity, the new hybrid threats and so on, which is why we need to invest heavily in defence. I agree, Carl, with you in terms of a standalone Department of Defence. I think one of the problems and challenges we have is because the Constitution limits the total number of ministers to 15.
Right,
and
but it's been deemed by government then not to be as much of a priority as higher and further education, which was in the Department of Education.
And I will defend the establishment of that, because one of the revolutions that we're experiencing at the moment is in the area of technology, and we need to ensure that our citizens are upskilled and reskilled sufficiently to be able to
deal. A super junior across the departments of enterprise and education wouldn't have been enough to do that.
That would be an argument that you would make. So an argument.
So Silicon Valley is more important than the UN Security Council.
It's not about Silicon Valley. It's about the pace of technological change that is happening, and about ensuring that our citizens are upskilled and reskilled to be able to make those challenges.
Aren't too many PhDs standing on the blue line in peacekeeping duty, risking their lives.
What I'm not going to try to do, unlike what you're trying to do, Colm, is to sort of put one group against another.
Which the Constitution demands. You've just said it. It's a zero-sum game between the different ministries, isn't it?
Yeah, so here's the question. So should we look at more than 15 ministers or government departments? Because one of the other issues is...
That's probably a better question.
It's a better question, because if you look at, for instance, another department, at the Department of Tourism, Sport, Arts, Culture, Gaeltacht and the Media, which even remembering all the six elements of that at times, can be a challenge. And it's often raised a question, is that too big and too broad a department? So there is probably a question that we need to have, because in the past, the Department of Defence has been lobbied in with the Department of Justice, which was even more inappropriate. I think that the real test around this, though, and it has to be around the reports that have come, and by the way, it also includes around the Women of Honour report, which I'm glad to say, even though he hasn't yet received it, it's his intention, once he's read it, that he would implement it in full. But we are showing real commitment.
All right.
The biggest increase of any vote in the budget was for the Defence Forces budget.
The Women of Honour, the group that was formed, called Women of Honour, after whom this report has been named, are not impressed with the length of time and the level of consultation that was engaged with by them. And in the statement they issued this evening, they said, unfortunately, it is evident from those still serving and still suffering that little of anything of value has changed. And how could it, as a comprehensive examination of the issues has not yet happened? Instead, all of us affected, serving or otherwise, continue to wait for a report from a process that may have been nothing more than a waste of another year, which has seen no changes, no resolutions, and more victims. Cathal Berry, what do you make of that statement?
Well, I very much look forward to the report coming out next week. And I think there's a key word used there that may. They don't really know what the report actually says yet. It's an independent report. There was a board of three people, so an ex-High Court judge, senior counsel, HR expert. I think we just need to wait for the report and see what it says.
I suppose their central grievance is that they received no updates, unlike other stakeholders affected by the report. Yeah, that's their central allegation here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true, but if it is, then it's not the way to do business. Okay. I mean, everybody should be treated with parity, basically, in these circumstances.
Gary Gannon?
Yeah, no, I'm very conscious of three male politicians coming out, speaking of a report about the Women of Honour. So what they, in the statement that they put out tonight, I'm going to just take them at their word on that. If they feel the process has been undermined, if they feel devalued within it, I think that's the most important thing we can be placing on the record here. So yes, the Taoiseach will accept all the recommendations. I think he said he would. That's important. But actually more important for me is the fact that the people who should have been most prominent in the report don't have any confidence in it. And Malcolm, that's very far to step away from.
Malcolm Byrne?
Well, I think the key, which is the concern that I would have from the statement that came out this evening, is where they feel that there hasn't been a culture change within the organisation. Because you can have all the reports you want, but if the culture persists within the organisation, that continues to be a problem. And one would have hoped that as a result of those women very bravely speaking out, you know, that action would have been taken immediately, regardless of the independent report having to happen. So that's obviously a matter of concern if those within the Defence Forces feel in any way that it is unsafe, because anybody who chooses to serve, like in any workplace, it should be a safe working environment. What Tarnish to me on Martin said this evening was, and as Christina Finn mentioned, when he was questioned on this, he hasn't yet received the report. But he said, look, he will recommend it. It is rumoured to be hard-hitting. He will implement the recommendations. What is critical out of this, and the Chief of Staff has said this, is that, you know, the Defence Force, like anywhere else, it's a workplace, it's a specialist workplace. Everybody who serves there should feel safe. And I think the thing that I've of concern on this is, even without seeing the report, if there are still women within the Defence Forces who don't feel that it's a safe environment, then there are certainly questions to answer.
Just right, to pick up on two things that make the statement hit home. He hasn't seen the report yet, but rumours that it's hard-hitting, exactly what they've said in their statement. They've got no updates throughout the process, despite stakeholders that are already answerable for the atrocities, and they allege that they've been receiving periodic updates on the interim report, and they've been left in the dark. And it's these are the voices that we need to listen to, and solidarity to those women who bravely came forward and told their stories and actually say, like it has been, that there has been a waste of another year, and who knows, that there could be more victims.
All right. But before we leave this topic and go on to other matters, just finally, the supply, Cathal Berry, of Leopard 2 tanks by Germany and a number of other countries. The Americans have supplied tanks as well as the UK. But for the European countries that have supplied tanks, what blowback should be anticipated from Russia, and what preparation should be made in anticipation of that, even if it never comes?
Yeah, so I suppose three things. So the rhetoric has started already, and the propaganda through the airwaves. You'd probably expect a few more standoff weapons, but like more cruise missiles and more drones coming in. And then there is a possibility of a general mobilisation of Russian conscripts. So currently we've been told it was just a partial mobilisation, but they might move to a more generalised mobilisation and go into a proper war footing. That's a concern.
And from for the rest of the European Union, any particular concerns of the order of cyber or anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. Like hybrid is continuing for sure. Hybrid warfare, hybrid conflict. My big concern, and no one really is mentioning it, but I mean, this year's fighting in Ukraine is going to be much, much worse than last year. And Ireland is utterly, utterly undefended, utterly unprotected and utterly vulnerable. And instead of increasing our defence capacity over the last 12 months, which would have been a prudent, sensible thing to do, it's been downgraded even further. We saw even two naval ships were tied up yesterday. I mean, this is an island nation. It's just not good enough. Ireland as a country, we're leaving our doors and windows open at night, and it's just not how to do business.
Malcolm Byrne, the accommodation's not there, the defence investment's not there in terms of cyber and other things.
I mean, Carl knows that I agree with him on a lot of these issues, particularly on cyber. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is this week, as I found out today, the HSE is actually sending out letters to some of those who were directly affected by the cyber attack on the HSE, which is the kind of attack that we are going to see is going to become far more common. Now, one thing that is welcome is we are significantly ramping up investment in the National Cybersecurity Centre, which had been underinvested in for a number of years. But we are going to have that big policy debate around defence and national security and policy. We haven't been having a realistic debate, I feel, until now. And it's often crowded, and the wrong question is always thrown out there is, should we join NATO? That is actually not the question.
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction. Right. The question for Ireland is, for us as a country, what is the appropriate level of defence and security that we should have? Do we provide it on our own? Do we do it in partnership with other democracies, particularly our European colleagues?
Yeah, so you also just want to highlight one of the ludicrous memories of our last cyber attacks was actually the Department of Defence wasn't in control of it. It was their Department of Communications, which had responsibility. It was farcical. In terms of what we need right now, we need the capacity for radar to know it's above our skies, below our seas. We need to be able to pay our defence force as well, and we need to have ships that can go out to sea. I've heard successive governments talking about we need to have a debate. Why don't we have the debate? I'm sick of people keep telling, well, I've seen the Taoiseach, we need to talk. Well, okay, what does that mean? Are we having it on the radios?
But,
we haven't at all.
We are.
You're in government.
Because if we talk around those issues, and when we raise questions around cyber, when we raise questions about, for instance, when
it's a legitimate question. The government has huge influence over how the Dáil time is spent.
I accept that.
Have the debate.
So we've had debates around, you know, the reports with regard to the future of the defence forces. We've had a serious investment that's happening there. But it comes to
that wasn't
and
a debate.
It's interesting. Well what I'm going to say is it's interesting that this year we're celebrating 50 years of Ireland's EU membership. And in many ways a lot of the countries we had something in common with were, you know, Sweden and Finland, who were both, you know, neutral in their approaches on issues. They've suddenly very much shifted because of the invasion of Ukraine.
You're getting back to that issue. You were calling a distraction. We are going to actually have to get on to something else shortly. We've mentioned cyber and everything else, which is something that impacted on the next thing we're going to discuss about, which is the state of mental health services for children, which we're going to look at after this.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.